The DSR Network has expanded to 10 podcasts, and to celebrate our expansion, we're running weekly specials in different podcasts each week. This week, listeners of the DSR Daily Brief can receive 25% off the membership price. Members receive an ad-free listening experience and bonus content for virtually all of our shows via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for selected podcasts, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, and early access to select podcasts. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code DAILY to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code DAILY. Please note that this special promotion ends on March 8th. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the DSR Daily. I'm David Rothkopf, joined as ever by Christopher Cotnoir. How are you doing, Chris?
Doing well, thank you.
And Riley M. Fessler. How are you doing today, Riley?
Pretty good.
So last night, Chris, did you watch the State of the Union?
I did. I took copious notes also.
You did?
I did.
You must be a ton of fun around the house.
I figured, you know,
your family must be like, oh God, he's taking notes. We've lost him. So what did your notes say?
They were all sleeping. Oh. And frankly, I was watching on my iPad in bed.
Well, that's, you know, at least you're engaged, you know? So what's the headline?
Yeah. So I was going to kind of couch my comments in terms of sort of general, let people react, domestic, foreign, and then the Republican response.
Yeah, that was great, the Republican response.
So first is, you know, this State of the Union presented President Biden with an opportunity to showcase his, you know, his many achievements over the course of the past 4 years. You know, I think a lot of people forget when he took office that COVID was actually rampant in this country, you know, that he inherited a pretty terrible situation. And I thought the overall tone of his speech to the country in terms of who he was addressing, I thought we got a lot of tidbits around the Democrats' strategy going into the general election, and I loved what I heard, and I'll get more specific later. But I thought the tone was great. Thought, you know, as many media outlets have pointed out, you know, feisty, I guess, is the word that people were using. I just thought he came across as presidential, that he addressed really key things, you know, that people are going to be paying attention to over the course of the next 8 months. I don't think, you know, with the exception of, you know, a moment or two, that he could have done much better than he did, given, you know, the circumstances, which is essentially the State of the Union last night was his kickoff for the 2024 presidential campaign.
What do you think, Riley?
I thought it was great. I mean, I think, you know, listening to the pod yesterday with Jen Rubin, which I think everyone should go listen to because she predicted kind of a lot of what Biden hit on in terms of, yeah, I mean, bringing the fight to the Republicans in a way that still was presidential. I think he really nailed, you know, there were a couple good moments where he was trading barbs with hecklers. My favorite was when he was talking about the CHIPS Act and other domestic production acts, where he said, you know, if anyone doesn't want funding to go to their district, just let me know, highlighting the fact that the Republicans voted against it and then were cheerleading for the results and claiming them as their own. I thought that was a great moment. I think also the narrative he crafted around age at the end of the speech was pretty interesting. I'm kind of curious how it's going to land, basically saying, yeah, I'm old, but we kind of saying with age comes wisdom. But then also, I thought the contrast between his old age and his opponent's old ideas was a really interesting way to frame it. I thought it was effective. I'm curious how that's going to land with kind of the general public, you know, given that that's such a big issue. But I think on the whole, you know, obviously he had a couple verbal stumbles, but I think nothing out of the ordinary for a 70-minute speech. And I think Republicans kind of shot themselves in the foot here by making the bar so low. You know, when you portray Biden as somebody who's a doddering old man who can barely string a couple sentences together, when he comes out and delivers a speech like this, it's even more of a home run because he's completely exceeded the expectations.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of don't care how low the bar was because I've seen a lot of State of the Unions in my life, even been to a couple of them. And this was one of the very, very best, if not the very best, that I've ever seen. I want to pick up on Chris's comment about the feistiness. You know, at the very beginning, he came out and he said, you know, at the beginning of World War II, we thought we faced a great challenge. And we face that kind of challenge today, but it's a challenge from within. And essentially said, look, you know, the challenge we faced from fascists in the 1930s and 40s is now the challenge we face from Donald Trump here, right now. It was incredibly bold. And then he doubled down. In fact, as was pointed out by Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC after the speech, 13 times during the speech, he made a direct reference to his predecessor, something you can't really do in a State of the Union about a campaign opponent, unless that opponent happens to have been the last president. And every single time he brought it right to him, he brought it to him about his support of Vladimir Putin. He brought it to him about his support of repealing Roe v. Wade. He brought it to him about saying immigrants are poisoning the bloodstream of America. He brought it to them about the opposition of Trump to the border bill. One time after another, these were not glancing blows. These were knockout punches. They were carefully calculated. They were much bolder than you usually get in a State of the Union or, frankly, in any other kind of speech. And it was kind of like, you want some of this? Come and get it. And it was really impressive, really well done, really high energy. And at the end, the Republicans had nothing left except to say, oh, I think he was hopped up on drugs. That couldn't have really been him, which was, you know, pathetic. But it was no more pathetic than the Republican official response, which Chris referred to earlier and which I'm sure we will get to.
Yeah, so I thought the theme of the evening, you know, he talked about history's watching. As you said, he started off with the historical reference and then pivoted to Putin. If you think Putin is going to stop at Ukraine, you're crazy. Democracy is under attack. Loved it. Weaved in January 6th. Like, let's not forget what actually happened just before President Biden took office. He called on everyone to defend democracy. And then, you know, the quotes to me that stuck out, turning setback into comeback. Obviously, that's going to be a big campaign theme, I think, for President Biden. The other thing that struck me in speaking domestically now, he got extremely specific. It's not something, you know, when you're giving campaign speeches, you can paint your vision. You can talk about, you know, what you want to do. He can talk about what he has done. He talked about, you know, what he will do, you know, in education, reproductive rights, you know, unions, you know, just touting his record, bipartisan infrastructure law, all of that I thought really played well. And gave us a lot of insight into the voters that they're going after and the voters that need to, you know, coalesce around Biden as we, you know, go through this 8-month process.
Yeah, well, he certainly kicked the process off. Riley, what did you think on those points?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially how much he hammered home, just all the thing, all the legislation they passed to bolster the U.S. economy, I think is critical, given that one of his biggest issues is trying to bridge the gap in the perception by Americans of the economy and the reality of the fact that the economy is actually doing very well. And for some reason, Americans just aren't perceiving that. So I think spending so much time talking about everything that's been done to ramp up domestic production, again, protect unions, and even revising kind of tax code, I think is, should help. I mean, I don't know what else they can really do to kind of bridge the gap and make sure that people are understanding, hey, the economy is actually doing very well. It's doing better now than it was under my predecessor. If you want to keep this success, vote for me again, being the implication. So I really think that he did really well on that front, talking, especially the kind of anecdotal story about Belvidere, Illinois, you know, clearly chose that as a kind of heartland story of the success of his policies. And I hope it landed. It did for me. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ron Klain, his former chief of staff, was on TV before the speech. And he said, you know, this is going to be a speech about a man who's focused on governing. And, you know, the day after the speech, what's the first thing that hits the news? Jobs report, 275,000 jobs added, hours up, unemployment under 4%, as it has been for two straight years. You know, the Republicans, you know, like Marjorie Taylor Greene wore a ugly hat, right? The Republicans sat on their hands and, you know, looked grumpy the whole time. They got nothing. They got nothing except the bad stuff, you know. And in point after point, Chris, as you point out, he said, this is what we've done. This is what we did on infrastructure. This is what we did on CHIPS and Science Act. This is what we did on the Inflation Reduction Act. This is what we did on the Recovery Act. This is, a panoply of achievements. This is, you know, what we wanted to do on immigration, and you stopped us. And then he had a bunch of solid proposals, whether it was giving people a break on helping to pay their mortgages or taking steps to help bring down the rent for people, taking steps to make the tax code fairer and raise $500 billion simply by making billionaires pay a little bit more of the taxes. For all the focus on the emotional content of the speech, it had fantastic substantive content. And what's more, the substantive content was not just empty promises. It was founded in things that have actually happened in the past 3 years. And so if you were looking for, you know, a combative campaign speech, you got it. If you were looking for somebody who would stand up to Trump, you got it. If you were looking for something that was framing the speech in the context of the great issues of our time, and, you know, he had a line about the freedoms that are being currently threatened, you got it. But if you were looking, you know, as one of our wonky listeners might be, for the policy substance, it was right there. So a great balance. Chris?
Finally, yesterday we talked about wanting to hear what his you know, views and policies were going to be specific to Israel. I think overall, I was pretty pleased with, you know, what he said in terms of how they were going to address it. I don't necessarily think he was forceful enough in terms of Benjamin Netanyahu specifically, but he specifically said, two-state solution. He had concrete steps that the U.S. military was going to set up ports in Gaza to be able to deliver humanitarian aid. I thought that was great. I still think there's more needed in terms of, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu's approach to this whole and again, he said Israel has a right to defend itself. I know that he said that. He also said that they have a responsibility to ensure the safety of civilians, including allowing humanitarian aid to enter the country and not using it as a bargaining chip. All great. But, you know, I think more needs to be done. Maybe that's a little nitpicky. Maybe you disagree with me, David. But overall, two-state solution. U.S. president just said, Israel, Palestine, two-state solution. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with everything you just said, Riley.
Yeah, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the Republican response because it's been kind of funny and how sad it is. Mike Johnson called the speech overly partisan, and I think that's more of an indictment of the current state of the Republican Party, if anything. You know, if you take issue with Biden saying he wants to protect democracy at home and abroad and you think that's partisan, that's more of an indictment of you than the president. You know, if one side is saying we want to improve the economy, we want to ensure that democracy survives in our country, we want to ensure that the people of Gaza get their, you know, rights protected and their, you know, ability to survive ensured, that's an indictment of you. That's not an indictment of the partisanship of the president. And, you know, Donald Trump, unsurprisingly, just gave the most kind of bizarre reactions to it, saying, quote, "That may be the angriest, least compassionate, and worst State of the Union speech ever made. It was an embarrassment to our country." And then going on to insult Biden's appearance, saying his hair is much better in the front than on the back, which, I mean, come on, Trump. You can't be talking about other people's hair like that. But I mean, it's just deeply unserious responses to this speech, which I think is proof that it was a very strong speech. If this is the best they've got, they're in trouble.
Hey, can I just add, so I also watched the 20 minutes that Katie Britt spoke. I'm pretty sure, and she watched Sally Struthers commercials, because she was, whining is not the right word, but she was like overly emotional. It was a performance for the ages. And she said absolutely nothing. Sadly, she probably got her talking points and had to stay on, you know, those talking points before the speech. And all she could interject at the beginning was, you know, "Oh, my husband Wesley and I watched the speech as you mostly didn't." And, you know, she was pleading, you know, and talking to mothers. She was talking about, which I thought was crazy. I mean, she's from Alabama. She was talking about rights for IVF. I don't understand where that came from. But like, to Riley's point, they had nothing of substance to say, and all they could really do was talk about the things they've been talking about. You know, the immigration issue is going to be big. I don't think there's any question about that. And they're going to pound Biden on immigration. You know, maybe their strategy is they're going to continue to hold up the, you know, the bill or not send anything to his off, you know, to the president's desk for signing. But yeah, totally agree with Riley. I mean, Katie Britt, they obviously paraded her out there because she's the youngest Republican. You know, the juxtaposition against Biden, I guess. And as she's being touted as a vice presidential candidate, you know, they were introducing her to the country. Was not impressed.
I think you're being too kind. She was creepy as hell. I mean, to me, it was like watching some cross between The Stepford Wives and Handmaid's Tale. And she came out here and she was, you know, very, you know, carefully set up in a kitchen because that's where women belong, folks. And talked about her first, you know, the first role she identified was being a wife. And she had a very carefully draped around her neck little cross. And she tried, you know, to speak to the issues that I think her neighbors may have, you know, but she sounded like a simpleton. She looked like a nitwit. Her tone was completely off following Biden's speech. And I thought the long soliloquy that she did from a junior high school acting class on rape could have been a shot at her own candidate. I mean, does she realize a judge said that her own candidate, the one she backs, was a rapist? You know, if she's against rape, you got to be against Trump. The thing that was driven home to me, though, that was more substantive, is Katie Britt was trying to embody the MAGA idea of what a woman is: quiet, mousy little voice in the kitchen, traditional, and was totally ignoring the fact that most of the women of America, the 21st century women of America, are outraged at the stance of the Republican Party that takes away their bodily autonomy, their reproductive rights, and that, you know, they just don't seem to understand. This is why they're losing again and again and again. As for the rest of the Republican response, you know, it's outrageous and silly that Mike Johnson, you know, who last night played a grumpy elf sitting there on his booster seat behind the president, would say that the speech was too political. The Republicans didn't applaud one damn thing. They didn't applaud standing up to Putin. They didn't applaud fighting for freedom. They didn't applaud the progress that has been made on bipartisan bills. They didn't applaud the border bill that was created largely by Republicans. They didn't applaud Santa Claus or blue skies or mom and apple pie. They just said, look, we're obstructionists. Now, that's politics, too. That's political. Marjorie Taylor Greene in a MAGA hat is political. Some crazy Republican, you know, congressman yelling lies is political. They were every bit or more as political than Biden. They just weren't good at it, and they weren't effective, and they don't have an alternative agenda. And you didn't hear that from Katie Britt, and you haven't heard it from anybody else, and you won't hear it for Trump, because they don't have a plan B. And that's kind of extraordinary. They're simply running on being against whatever the Democrats are for. But, you know, to wrap it up, we saw a president give a speech for an hour and a half, highly vigorous, spend a half an hour leaving the room, talking to people. By the way, there was a side conversation he had with some folks, Chris, in which he said, you know, he told, you know, Netanyahu he wanted to have a come to Jesus moment. You know, it was very clear from the remarks about the Middle East that although Biden started with the litany of we are friends of Israel and we want to support Israel and Israel is right to defend itself and Hamas is awful, all of which is true, by the way, that the thrust of his speech was we are taking action now to help the people of Gaza. The Israelis have done damage, and we are now going to do what we can to fix it. We're not going to wait for Israel to do the right thing because they're just simply not doing the right thing. It was very strong, just like his remarks in Ukraine were strong. I thought it was very strong when he said, look, here's the prime minister of Sweden, the newest member of NATO, and he acknowledged him up there. Again, very effective, much more foreign policy focused, starting with foreign policy, you know, making it a centerpiece than you typically get in these things. And that was effective. My final point is his final point, owning his age, saying it brought him experience, but saying the difference was between him and his competitor, who he alluded to being the same age, was that he was focused on the future. I really liked the future focus. I think it plays well. I think it's what we need. And, you know, I was prepared to despair of the speech, despair of, you know, how it was being handled. I was not just pleasantly surprised. I thought he had it out of the park. Apparently, you guys did too. Apparently, voters who were polled did too. There was a, I think, a CNN poll where before the speech, 45% of the people in the room said they thought, you know, Biden had a good agenda for America. And after the speech, 62% of the people in the room said Biden had a good agenda. So when you can go and boost by over 33%, the number of people who think you're doing a good job, you're heading in the right direction, and you do that in 1.5 hours in a speech, that's pretty remarkable. It was a remarkable night, and I think it was very significant globally, and that's why we focused the whole podcast on it. We've got more coming to you later today, as we always do, and each and every day. There's a weekend coming up, and so we hope you have a great weekend, and that you don't forget that at 2 o'clock on Sunday morning, spring forward. You set your clocks forward. It'll be lighter later. That's good news. Also, I would add one other thing. One thing I'm watching today, following Biden's fiery pro-democracy performance yesterday, how is Donald Trump responding? He's meeting with Viktor Orban at Mar-a-Lago. And so I am going to be following that real closely, because nothing illustrates better what's going on here than having Putin's errand boy meeting with Putin's other errand boy in the wake of this speech. Tells you all you need to know. For now, thanks for listening. Come back soon. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Riley. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.